Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right, for just $20, we'd say your name here. We'd say something nice about you, and maybe, mentally, even give you a high five. Just go to nerdandtie.com, click on the sponsor information, and do the rest from there. Also, you can help support our legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie if you fancy, and we'd be eternally grateful, and also mentally high five you with our brain.
On this episode of Nerd and Tie, we got a first glimpse at the costume for Batwoman. Venom just came out. We'll give you our thoughts on that. There's talks about Suicide Squad 2 being written. And we share our favorite, not spooky, Halloween thing.
By James Gunn! Suicide Squad written by James Gunn! That's the important part of that headline!
Sure. Rolling with it. I'm Genjamin. With me, as usual, are Trey and Nick. Say hi.
Hi.
Hello. I'm the one they call Nick.
I'm the one they call Trey Dorn. Unless they don't, and then it's a mystery to even me.
And
I made
it
awkward. Oh,
we got a fun night ahead of us.
Yeah, and one of those fun things was seeing the first photos of Batwoman costume.
Oh. Yay! Going right in there.
You're barreling into it.
Full speed, full head over foot.
So, I know we've talked about costumes on these superhero shows in the past and how it's not necessarily a make or break deal, but it's definitely a bonus. And this is one of those Arrowverse costumes where I'm going to be real with you guys. I don't even have any caveats. I just like it. I like it a lot. Well, it looks just like the one from the comic.
I'm going to tell you flat out that, like, I actually got confused when I saw the headline with the preview link. And I was like, I saw an image of Batwoman. And I was like, oh, so the preview image is going to be a comic screen grab, and then I'll open up the link on, like, the thing, and it'll show me the actual costume look like, not realizing what I was looking at was the costume.
That was real.
It is, like, it is a dead-on, like...
It is impressive.
Yeah, so obviously this is for the annual Arrowverse crossover. This year they're doing, I think they're calling it Elseworld. Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That, and then if they're also going to do a pilot for a possible Batwoman series, which may or may not get picked up, so we might see more of this costume beyond the crossover, but obviously no guarantees. But I think that it looks pretty amazing.
For sure.
I think they've done a really good job with the costumes in the Arrowverse shows. Just overall, I really like them.
Sometimes it can be hit or miss. It's more often hit, if you ask me. But yeah, this is one where I loved it. Loved everything about it.
He's good.
Yeah.
He's very good.
I agree. I can't really say more on the matter. It looks super good.
I mean, there's, you know, it's like a if you were gonna say, hey, what does Batwoman's costume look like, that's it.
I think it's a very fine line translating superhero costumes from book to screen, because, like, we have run into times where, like, they get absolutely ridiculous, but I think generally I agree with you, Trey, that on the Arrowverse they've done a really good job of just, like, translating them in a really just realistic way, and just,
yeah,
like,
well, there's
it
an,
makes sense.
There's an aesthetic that they have with a lot of, like, that they started with Arrow with kind of a like more leather based it's, and, you know, like when they first debuted the Flash's costume for the Arrowverse, like, there was a little bit of concern because it's very different than, you know, what people expected, you know, to come out of, you know, because, you know, it was very, you know, bulky, but then in motion, obviously it looks great. And, but the,
I really loved the costume when I first saw it. I was in that weird minority.
Well, I liked it, but, I could understand where like the concerns were, but either way, it works great in motion. And, I think the interesting, and obviously the Supergirl costume is perfect. It's phenomenal. And so, but the interesting thing here is that I guess like the Batwoman costume lends itself so much to this aesthetic to start with. I'm really happy they went with like the straight, the way her mask is.
Yeah.
Like they didn't try to do any like modifications there, but I think you kind of need to like make sure you match the comics for that mask, because or else like there's a risk of making it look like Batgirl instead of Batwoman.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're both redheads in a bat motif defending Gotham City. You know, kind of thing. Ooh.
Well, there's definitely superhero gone right so far, but there can also be superhero gone wrong. Maybe?
Question mark.
So Venom.
Question mark?
Venom was released this last weekend, and it has set. It's been like setting some pretty record numbers for October, which is stunning. Like it's the movie was on a production budget of $100 million. They think it's actually going to cross $100 million domestically today in box office. But it did. It's done almost $90 million right now domestically. It's $89.8 million domestically. But then it's also done an additional $127 million internationally. So total worldwide, it has already made back twice its budget. It's at $217 million. So the movie is, by all like metrics, a financial success for the studio. For Sony.
I'm sure Sony is breathing huge sighs of relief.
Well, it's an interesting, you know, this movie was supposed to be rated R originally. It got cut down to a PG-13. Tom Hardy himself said, when asked about what his favorite parts of the movie in the interview, said all of his favorite parts were cut out of the film, which is not a good way to promote your film, Tom Hardy.
Plus, it's a Venom movie that Spider-Man isn't in. Like,
yeah, it's,
there were so many signs that made it look like this was not going to work.
Now, here's the thing. I'm going to tell you, is I'm the only one of the three of us who's seen the movie, so I'm going to keep this spoiler-free. I thoroughly enjoyed this film. It's been raked over the coals by critics, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I will say that every criticism you hear about this movie is largely true. It is not a perfect movie. It is in many metrics a bad movie, but it's also really funny. And on purpose, like, oh, it's so bad. It's no. This movie is funny on purpose. Tom Hardy definitely 100% thought he was making a comedy when he made this movie. Like,
okay.
His performance as Eddie Brock is intentionally funny. Like, and he does a phenomenal job as Eddie Brock.
To their credit, you know, people forget this, but, like, Venom was kind of a goofball in the comics.
Yeah.
Like, especially early on.
And he voices both Eddie and the Venom symbiote. They just modulate his voice down for the Venom symbiote, and his dual performance is amazing. And the problem is that really what happened with this film is that the studio got cold feet about kind of the more like the buzz is that the studio got cold feet about the more comedic direction. And so that's where a lot of things got like kind of, it's like any scene that Tom Hardy isn't in is like you're watching a different movie.
Okay.
It's like when you hear like things like this movie fell out of a wormhole from 2004, like a superhero movie from 2004. In many respects, they're right. The way the villain is scripted, the way like Michelle Williams is in this movie playing the Eddie Brock's ex. Like, and she is a phenomenal actress, but she's given like nothing to work with in this script whatsoever. Like,
gotcha.
Most of the stuff, like, all the failings of the film come to the fact that The bad guy is very predictable. It's there's lots of there's some logical inconsistencies in how medical trials are done in this movie, but like overall it's because every time Tom Hardy's on the screen, he's amazing. Like I think like I said this like to my wife after we left the film, that I think it, with just a soundtrack swap, this would be the most brilliant black comedy I'd seen in a long time.
All right, interesting.
Because I think the weakest thing is the thing that weakens the film the most to me is that there are these like action sequences with Eddie Brock, or like these have this dramatic like score. And I'm like, this would be much funnier. This would be so much better if this scene was set to, like, Total Eclipse of the Heart. Like, I actually, like, came up with a Pandora station on the way home that was, like, I was like, and this song should have been in the soundtrack during this scene. And it's,
we'll have to do that
when it comes out.
Just... When all of us have seen it, is do a little recut.
Do a recut, because I'm like...
I like this idea.
Yeah, no, it's I think that movie should be redone with late 90s and early 2000s chick rock should be the soundtrack for any scene with Tom Hardy in it, and I think I have strong choices. And I think it would be amazing. But so that's why I'm saying like some of the comedy actually gets undercut by an overly dramatic score when clearly the performance in the scene is meant to be funny. And again, Tom Hardy is in on this. So, like, you don't feel bad laughing at the performance because it's really clear that, like, Tom Hardy's in on the joke. And I think that's what, like, it... Obviously, the rated R of the original footage would have been more gruesome, but I still think that's why it would have been a great black comedy if there hadn't been really any interference on this film. But the good news is that it's doing well. And, well, so, but I don't want to see this Venom go up against Spider-Man. I just want to say that. Like, I don't want to see this character interacting with Spider-Man anytime soon because I don't think it would necessarily work with the tone of, like, a Tom Holland film. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think you have to worry about that since, yeah.
Well, I think that's what Sony's really gunning for.
I think that's what Sony wants, but I think Marvel doesn't want that.
Well, they
so.
Don't. They don't. It's there's nothing more funny than the joint interview between Amy Pascal and Kevin Feige when like she's suggesting that Venom might be in the MCU, and Feige just like shuts her down. It's like no, like in a mid interview, it's pretty great. But what I would love to see is this Venom go up against, because you know we've got Into the Spider-Verse coming out in December, and they actually randomly like showed a clip from that post credits.
Weird, but it's Sony, so
yeah,
I shouldn't be surprised.
Right, like they did that weird thing with like that deal with Fox, where they put like what that X-Men scene after Amazing Spider-Man 2. Or was that Amazing Spider-Man 1? One of the Amazing Spider-Man.
It was Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, it's but at least they own Into the Spider-Verse, and it's Spider-Man adjacent, like Venom was Spider-Man adjacent. But I say that opens it up where I think I want to see the, like, was it Jake Johnson playing Peter Parker in that?
Yeah, I think so.
I want to see Jake Johnson as Spider-Man against Tom Hardy's Venom. Just put it in that universe. One of the universes.
Oh my god. Yeah, you see, the one downside I see to this, though, the awful side effect is that if this does well, Sony is going to want to ride this out, which means they are going to continue on their "we're going to make Spider-Man movies without Spider-Man" train that
well,
they've been talking about doing. And I don't know that Morbius or Black Cat are as good to carry a movie.
Well,
as
okay, so
Venom.
So the good news is I think with Venom, they're really clear what they want to do with the sequel. There is a mid-credit scene. Is it okay if I spoil the mid-credit scene?
It's already been spoiled for me personally. I don't know about Gen.
It's okay.
Because it doesn't have anything to do with the outcome of the film.
Mm.
But they tease Carnage.
That's what I was like thinking this whole time, was like, like Venom versus Carnage would be really good.
I'm almost surprised they didn't do that for the first movie. Yeah.
Well, the first movie, they needed to set up what Venom was and how he got here and like the symbiote and all that stuff, because
do his backstory.
Yeah, and they bring in the plot uses like the Life Foundation as kind of the antagonist stuff, so it's like it's,
and plus like you need to, like, if you just bring out Venom versus Carnage like
right out the gate, yeah,
right out the gate, like it's gonna be hard for people to like root for one over the other, you know.
That's true.
Both kind of similar.
Yeah, if we have an established connection to Venom, then we're going to be more likely to root for him. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it's the whole thing. You need to make... I think they did a good job setting up... Because there have been multiple versions of the Eddie Brock Venom in the comics since he was introduced in the 90s. And so I think they did a good job at kind of playing towards the more sympathetic version of him. This movie does not work with anyone other than Tom Hardy. I'm just going to say that flat out. This movie would not work with any other actor in that role. And it's, I was pleasantly surprised. I went in expecting the worst movie I'd seen in a long time based on the reviews. And while, again, it's what I say is every criticism you've read about this film is true. I just think that Tom Hardy's performance is so good that it still makes it an enjoyable film.
Okay.
That's why, like, so I'm going to say, go ahead and brace yourself for every bad thing you've heard about. I just also think that there's enough enjoyable content here where I liked the movie.
Cool.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Well... Man, how do I transition here?
Speaking of things movies, that tentatively were connected to the MCU at one point, but aren't.
And, like, good, but are probably bad. I don't know. But Suicide Squad 2.
Which we've known is happening.
And what's his face?
James Gunn.
I keep forgetting his name tonight.
James Gunn.
James Gunn.
Yeah.
The character Charles Gunn on Angel was named after him.
Fucking. Yeah, so James Gunn, maybe. Take it away, Nick.
Sorry. James Gunn, the writer-director of Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, after his... getting wrongfully fired by Marvel because of a Twitter campaign by Nazis, is looking to go over to DC and write and maybe even direct Suicide Squad 2. That is a big coup on DC's part, if this is true.
Yeah, it's so there have been conflicting reports about the level of involvement for James Gunn in the film. Some people are saying he's confirmed to be writing, while other sources are saying he's just in negotiations to write. And then there's the additional that he might be directing the movie, and there's conflicting information there. But it's odds are good that, no matter what, he's at least talking to Warner Brothers right now about writing the second Suicide Squad movie, which could, gasp, make a decent Suicide Squad film happen.
Which is not impossible. They did it in the with the animated movies. But...
Yeah, it's... So, like, I know a lot of people are like, oh, he's never going to go back to Marvel or whatever, but it's really clear based on the Marvel situation... that Marvel wanted James Gunn back, but Disney wouldn't let them. And so it's Disney made the call, and Marvel couldn't, get it done.
Disney made a stupid call, and I'm standing by that. Yeah.
Yeah, but that means that, like, no matter what, like, his exiting the Guardian stuff has, it's, of course, he's going to go look for other work. And
of course,
the other big, the other studio trying to do superhero movies with well-known properties is going to say, hey, we could, in the sequel to that film where we tried to ape the style of that one Marvel movie in the edit and reshoots, we could get the actual guy who made that movie we tried to ape in the style and reshoots for the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
That's a no-brainer. Oh, look, the guy who we wanted to imitate is looking for a job. We could just hire him.
Yeah, that's the potential of a good Suicide Squad movie. Just, I don't know how to cope with that. I obviously don't think it's impossible. It's just weird.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like it to happen because I'd like to see more content from Gunn. If I can't get the, you know, the Guardians movie I want, I can at least, you know, get something else.
I'd like it to happen, one, so that Gunn can have a job again, and two, because there's a lot of really great villains in the Suicide Squad who deserved way better than the piece of crap movie that they got. Frankly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Fingers crossed. If it is true, then, you know, cool. Lots of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well.
But I had forgotten all about that dude because I was too busy thinking up things for our main topic, which I'm really excited about, which is all about Halloween. And things we like that are not so scary.
Sorry.
If you want the scary version, tune in next time. But this time we're going to talk about our favorite not so scary Halloween stuff.
Next episode we get spooky. This episode we get spoopy.
Yes. Oh. I'm going to kick it off by going with one of my favorite cartoons that I've been rewatching. I have to do it every year. Over the Garden Wall.
Ah, excellent choice.
So good. So good. And, like, not really, like,
I would
scary.
Argue that that is legitimately creepy, though.
But it's definitely creepy. It's definitely eerie. If you've never heard of it, it's a Cartoon Network series that took all of its design aesthetic from antique, like, 1900s, like, Halloween cards and, like, vintage, like, weird stuff.
It's very Neil Gaiman flavored.
It is. Very much so. It basically tells the tale of these two brothers who are lost in the woods and trying to find their way home. And they encounter a bunch of weird stuff on the way, which is pretty spooky and delightful.
I agree. I love that series very much. The only thing I that makes it uncomfortable for me is that Elijah Wood's character, Wirt, is the spitting image of how I acted when I was 16 years old. So it's a little like looking in a mirror to the past and being embarrassed the whole time. But yeah, no, I like it.
I'm actually completely unfamiliar with this.
Oh, you would love it. It's so good. It's on Hulu.
I'd say, yeah.
It's 10 episodes long.
It's a little mini-series. It's worth your time.
Okay. I have Hulu.
Yeah, you would enjoy it greatly. Nick, what's a thing you like?
Okay, so, Halloween thing, I was thinking about some weirder stuff, because leave it to me to find something weird and or Japanese. This one is both. One of my favorite, sometimes you get, like, references to Halloween-y stuff in anime, and, you know, but usually it's used to some creepy effect, like the Cowboy Bebop movie. No, what I'm thinking of today is the first episode of the Dirty Pair OVA, Which was ironically titled Original Dirty Pair, even though if I'm not mistaken, it was the last OVA to feature the original actresses. And this episode is a lot of fun because our heroes, Kay and Yuri, find themselves in a bit of a weird job hunting down a Terminator-like skeleton robot in a Blade Runner-esque city on Halloween. So, you know, what? There's already people dressed as skeletons everywhere, and there's a bunch of characters dressed as characters from other intellectual properties, and Kay and Yuri are just having the worst time trying to hunt down this robot. And it's a really, if you haven't seen Dirty Pair, I highly recommend it. It's a fun anime from the 80s about these two women in a sci-fi setting who are trouble investigators, and they take care of, they are supposed to de-escalate situations, but Kay and Yuri always just cause more trouble than they started, which is why they're known as the Dirty Pair. It's a great series. That episode in particular was a lot of fun.
And please watch it instead of reading it. Mm-hmm. Nick lent me the light novels, and they're written terribly.
Okay.
Don't do it.
To my defense, my spouse lent you the light novels.
Ah!
I did not wish that harm upon you. It's amazing that this is definitely one of those examples where the anime is a lot better than the light novels that they were based on.
Yeah. Don't read them.
The anime is lots of... one other thing I want to mention about this episode is that Torrin Smith, who is a American comic book writer who was a big part in bringing a lot of anime over to the U.S. There's a character in Gunbuster named after him. He's friends with a lot of the crew at Gainax. Anyway, Torrin Smith was actually writing an American Dirty Pair comic. And while he was submitting storylines to the Japanese company, he submitted a story very similar to this one. And they told him that it was no good and that they couldn't use it. And about a year later, this OVA came out, and he was like, wait a minute. Or Jesus. So he claims anyway. So I don't know. I don't know if we can, trace Smith's original proposal. But so he claims that's how it went down. I find that really funny.
Yeah. Oof. All right. So I guess it's my turn.
Yep.
All right, so I have an annual tradition. Every Halloween, I pull out my DVD of Vampire Effect, which is originally known as Twins Effect in China, where it was made. It's a Hong Kong film starring pop group The Twins, Charlene Choi and Gillian Chung, and who were pretty big names in China in 2003 when the film came out. But it is a martial arts vampire movie where the
oddly familiar
starring Chinese pop stars with a cameo appearance by Jackie Chan, it's special guest star Jackie Chan in quotes, which is weird to have a guest star in a movie, but He has an extended scene where he has, like, there's a full Jackie Chan fight sequence in the middle of this movie at one point where he plays a ambulance driver who's no way tied to the main plot. Like, the main characters are there, and he's there because he intersected with the main plot, but it's just random Jackie Chan and zero explanation for why this random ambulance driver is Jackie Chan. Literally,
I love this already.
Literally, his character name is Jackie Chan. Anyways, so... the movie, like, is so hilarious. Like, it's intentionally hilarious. Like, for some reason, the bad guy vampire is supposed to be Russian, but always speaks in English, which is hilariously, like, almost, like, that's kind of racist.
Did you, like show this at OA?
Oh, I probably did.
Many years ago, because like this sounds vaguely remember. Like I
100% showed this at OA. I showed this multiple times at OA.
Okay.
It's I watch it every year. like it's there's an evil like so like you've got the main character who's the like the two main characters are one of them's a vampire hunter who's sent to be the partner of this other guy, and the other member of the twins is the sister of the vampire hunter, and like there's a whole thing where like the sister of the vampire hunter falls in love with the good guy vampire, and like it's hilarious. It's again, it's vampire Hong Kong action movie. And
this sounds delightful.
And there is a if you choose to watch it, if you choose to go find it, I know you can rent it online. You have to look out for the vampire that I describe as Vampire Will Ferrell. He's not played by Will Ferrell, and the actor, when not in vampire makeup, does not look like him. But in vampire makeup, the guy looks a lot like a young Will Ferrell. And that's so look fantastic. Out for Vampire Will Ferrell. You'll know him when you see him. But overall, like this movie is like it's completely tongue in cheek. Like it's completely self aware. It's you know, just because a lot of sex pictures have been leaked of half the cast at some point in the Chinese media, I have seen the penis of one of the cast members of this film, but not in the film. only in a Google image search on accident. because I did not have safe search turned on. I won't tell you which penis I saw. But it was someone's in this movie.
Keep me guessing.
But it's like, I love, like, there's so much stuff that's great in here. Like, there's so many great comedy scenes, like, including, like, because the good guy vampire, Prince Kazuf, he's got this servant named Prada, who is just, the actor playing him is just, Anthony Wong is just hilarious in that role. But yeah, no, it stars the twins, who are Charlene Choi and Gillian Chung, and then there's, like, Edison Chen is playing Kazuf. Like, it's just really good. And so, oh yeah, I'm sorry, technically Jackie Chan's character's name is Jackie Fong.
Okay.
But he's only ever referred to on screen as Jackie. His last name is never mentioned in the movie. He's in two scenes in the whole film. So my favorite thing is, so this movie, like, if you look at the Chinese movie poster, that anyone that says Twins Effect or, like, has the title in Chinese, like, you'll get only the main cast is on the poster. Jackie Chan, like, is a little name in the corner because of, like, his appearance on some of them, but, like, it's all the actual main cast of the film, like, on the poster. If you find the American cover for Vampire Effect, if you find the poster for that, you will see the two female leads who are the stars of the film, and then like Jackie Chan poorly photoshopped in from a still shot from the movie, and it's so obvious that the lighting is completely different because they knew very well that when they put this thing out in America, and like, because I first saw this movie when I was in a Hollywood Video in like 2004 or 2000, you know, like a year after this came out, maybe 2003. But I don't remember when the U.S. release happened. But, like, not long after, like, it was in, like, it's just he's clearly photoshopped in because, like, the American distributor was like, American people aren't going to know anybody in this movie, but it's got Jackie Chan in it. So they pasted him onto the cover really awkwardly. And it's,
it reminds me of the current DVD releases of The Giver. That make this big deal about how Mark Hamill's in it, even though he's in like two scenes.
He dies two-thirds of the... It's one of the movies where he dies two-thirds of the way into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other one? Laserhawk or not?
Laserhawk.
Yeah, Laserhawk's the other one.
It was shot here in Wisconsin,
ooh.
I'll have you know.
But so here's the thing. Like, I rented this movie. I rented a Vampire Effect, which is the U.S. title because, you know, the Twins effect isn't really, you know, going to sell the movie for what it is when no one has any idea who the Twins are. So Vampire Effect, went, like, I rented it because it looked awful on the, according to the cover. And then, so if we used to, my friends, we used to go to, like, Hollywood Video and rent bad movies. That's how I watched a lot of early Asylum releases and, like, like, it's what we do on Saturdays. We'd watch bad movies. And then we rented this, and we were like, this movie is amazing. we must watch this movie again forever. And so it's, and I've been, like, preaching the word of Vampire Effect as it's, it, as the best kung fu comedy vampire movie out there.
Sounds pretty great.
Well, you reminded me of another vampire film. I actually haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember absolutely loving it. It's called Moonchild.
Oh, yeah!
It's a Japanese film. It stars Hyde and Gackt. And they're okay. Vampires.
What?
Yup!
It barely has a plot beyond.
Oh, yeah, it just doesn't. Like, forget about it. It's literally just, like, those two being vampires and fighting some dudes sometimes. My favorite scene in the film is when Gackt breaks a guy's neck with his crotch.
Can confirm this happens.
Like, this is a...
This is a real movie.
I'm pretty sure they were just like, we need these two in a film together. Let's make them vampires. Okay.
How have I not heard of this? You know, that came out like a month after Vampire Effect.
Oh my gosh.
Crazy.
I was looking this up.
Surprised you haven't heard of that one.
I haven't. It's, you know what it is that, like, okay, so I was even like selling, like, not that long, like, I used to sell J-pop and J-rock CDs, but my level of knowledge was way behind my consumers. Is that everything I learned from, I would just pick up. And, like, I learned the names of the bands that I had in stock, but I wasn't in charge of doing the purchasing. So, like, the Vink and Peso just sent me stuff, and then I learned what I had. And so if someone asked for Hyde, I would say, okay, here's Hyde. Like, if someone, someone asked for Gackt, I was like, okay, these are the Gackt CDs I have. Like, I knew what I, like, I only learned the names because I was selling them. Like, I didn't listen to that. Like, I listened to J-pop in the early 2000s, but not J-rock.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So it's like, I can tell you, oh yeah, I've heard of Orange Road. I don't know any of their music. The only reason I know any Larkin Seal music is because of the fucking Full Metal Alchemist opening.
Acceptable.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So no, I have not seen Moonchild. Wait. 2045? Does this movie take place in the future?
You know, I
don't remember.
So actually, so
trying
it
to remember it is kind
it,
of a
it
chore,
takes place.
You know,
so I just pulled up the Wikipedia page. So they made the movie in 2003. It was released in 2003, and so like yeah, it's because Vampire Effect and this movie were both released in the spring of 2003. I just think that's funny, just a nice coincidence, but the plot, the first line of the plot is in the year 2014, so already we're starting like 11 years into the future from the film point of view. And then I'm just like, I'm not even reading the synopsis right now, but I know that the final paragraph of the Wikipedia synopsis jumps to 2045. So I'm just, yeah, it's apparently a science fiction vampire movie.
I'll say this much. I'm 98% convinced that Gackt and Hyde shot a moderately homoerotic home movie and then later shot some vampire scenes just to try to pretend there was a plot.
So, you know,
like,
what?
I am completely convinced that that is the actual origin story of this movie.
The movie takes place in China.
That is assuming that it actually has a plot, still.
It's the setup is that the film largely takes place in a fictional Chinese city.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the spring of 2003, there was a a Hong Kong movie. There was a Chinese film starring pop stars about vampires, set in China, and there was a Japanese film starring Japanese rock stars about vampires set in China.
Yep.
Yep.
2003 was apparently
2003
the year.
Was a weird year.
Was the year of musicians fighting vampires in China, or being vampires in China? I don't know. Well, yeah, no, that still works too because one of the guys in the Vampire Effect, the lead vampire good guy, was a pop star. So yeah, that's a weird coincidence.
Well, you know, I actually might have one more movie to add to this theme of weirdly humorous Asian horror comedy movies, as it so happens. Because all of these movies reminded me of one of my favorite movies ever, Wild Zero, a film from 1999. Are either of you familiar with Wild Zero?
I am not familiar with this movie.
Okay, Wild Zero was a ego project by the Japanese rock band Guitar Wolf.
I've heard of Guitar Wolf.
Gas.
And it is a rock and roll punk zombie movie. One of Japan's first just straight up zombie movies, for that matter.
Okay.
The interesting thing is that Guitar Wolf himself and his band are not the main characters of the movie. No, a different guy is the main character. He is trying to survive a zombie outbreak, while meanwhile, Guitar Wolf et al. Are fighting the zombies very successfully, because while they are the most badass characters in the movie, they are not the protagonists. The best part of this insane film, and it is a truly insane film that I love to death, and I mean, I love everything about it, is a twist involving the person who the main character is in love with. I don't want to spoil it, but I'm going to say that Wild Zero is an incredibly inclusive movie. It is about the power of rock and roll and how it will save us from the zombie apocalypse. And any time the main character starts to have doubts, suddenly Guitar Wolf appears in front of him yelling, "Rock and roll!" And then explaining to him why, if he just put faith in the power of rock and roll, he wouldn't be in such dire straits. It's a lovely movie.
I love it. It reminded me of another film. It's Trey's turn.
No, you go.
Oh, I was going to say, it reminded me of Rockula.
Oh, I have not seen that.
Oh my gosh, go to the Wikipedia page right now and like read the first paragraph of the plot. Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous. It's an American movie about this vampire who's, oh, he's 400 years old. He had a girlfriend like 300 years ago, but she got killed in a very specific way. And it's destined that she gets reincarnated like every 22 years, but keeps getting killed in this very specific way. And he has to, like, try to stop that so, like, he can actually get laid. And the way his girlfriend gets killed every single time, by a pirate, no less, she's killed on Halloween by a rhinestone peg-legged pirate wielding a giant ham bone.
Okay.
How his girlfriend dies, and he has to stop that. God, Bo Diddley's in this movie. I forgot. It's wacky. That's, yeah. Everyone go check out Rockula. It is crazy.
It looks crazy.
You know what these last two things have reminded me of?
What?
Hard Rock Zombies.
Oh my God.
Have you heard of or seen Hard Rock Zombies?
I have not heard of nor have I seen Hard Rock Zombies.
Hard Rock Zombies, it was made in 1985. And it's a it's about a rock band that then gets killed by Hitler, who is alive and living in rural America under an assumed name and identity.
Like you do.
So anyways, Hitler kills them. And then they come back as zombies and have to fight Hitler.
Oh my gosh.
So, like, I can't. There's technically more of the plot than that, but.
Does it matter?
Does it matter? Yeah, so Hard Rock Zombies is a kind of unique, also called Heavy Metal Zombies, but Hard Rock Zombies is usually how it's packaged, and it's the original title. They're such a hard rock band with that prominent keyboard.
Right, of course.
The tagline of the film is their farewell concert is to die for. And it is the film is just it's an experience. Everyone should have the experience at least once of seeing Hard Rock Zombies. I was gifted a copy at FMIS 1 year. but yeah, no, I can't describe this movie beyond that because there's not actually a lot of plot. There's a ton of filler.
That seems to be a theme.
There's a ton of filler in this movie. It's like I've seen music videos with. So one review said effectively a feature length music video. It is entirely possible that Hard Rock Zombies could be held up as a triumph in non sequential art, except that most of it will just leave you wondering what the hell is going on. That's from The Real Bits. That's from a quote
that
from
is
the
a
review.
Phenomenal review.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. It's Hard Rock Zombies, man. It's the Moonchild of the 80s. Only with no one you've ever heard of.
We have taken quite the turn. Do we have anything that's not a rock and roll comedy movie at this point?
Well, I've got, like, in the vein of campy, like, just camp in the world of, like, horror and gore. There's a TV show that I absolutely love that Eric cannot stand. And it's called A Thousand Ways to Die.
Oh, dear.
And it literally, like, just shows reenactments of, like, these hilarious and, like, crazy, insane ways people have passed away.
See, that sounds awful to watch to me.
See, like, yeah.
I'm with Eric on this.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, that sounds appealing. I might check it out.
It's just like, dude was snow blowing and a giant icicle like went through his skull. And it's just like the way they play it up is.
Except
like,
that's a fear I've always had when I was like shoveling my parents' driveway.
Yeah, like
there would get icicles on the second floor of the house that would get long, and there's no way to reach them.
Scary stuff. I don't deny that.
I know.
It's like actual scary stuff. But the way they, like, camp it up is kind of delightful. And takes away the fear factor, at least for me.
So, sounds good to me. I'll have to check this out.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I have more. I like.
I'm impressed. I'm sure. I was really excited for. Okay. My favorite Halloween movie is a horror comedy, if I'm gonna be real with you guys. And I was thinking about saving this one for the actually scary, but I'll like actually creepy stuff, but I have plenty of stuff for that. So here's one that I'll bring up where actually I'm going to say both the original and the remake are 100% worth your time. Fright Night. I love the original movie Fright Night, and I love the Anton Yeltsin remake of Fright Night. Fright Night, both versions are the story of a young man who has a strange neighbor move in next door. And said young man, who's a big fan of horror movies and all of the genre tropes, thinks that his neighbor might be a vampire. And here's the thing. His neighbor actually is a vampire. But, you know, no one believes him because he's just a horror movie trope-spouting weirdo. So, he ends up enlisting the help of someone who was more educated in what's going down. So, in the original, it's Roddy McDowall playing a Svengoolie-esque local horror movie host who used to be in a bunch of vampire movies, but now he's a washed-up actor who just hosts horror movies on local TV. And they manage to like defeat these actual vampires using his prop kit from the old vampire movies.
That's great.
And then in the remake, it's Anton Yeltsin believes his neighbor Colin Farrell is a vampire, and he enlists the help of David Tennant, who is cursing and using a shotgun. And the biggest difference is that Tennant's character is a Vegas magician instead of a horror movie host. But yeah, he enlists the help of the least likely person, and both versions are great for different reasons. Especially great in the original is Roddy McDowall going along with the kid's ideas and straight up saying when he's asked, "Do you know if this will work?" And he's like, "Well, it worked in all the vampire movies I was in, and it works like a charm." It's both movies are so much fun. The 80s one is delightfully 80s cheese, has great practical effects, and a hilariously cheesy theme song. The modern remake has Anton Yeltsin and David Tennant, and David Tennant cursing up a storm. Both are lots of fun. I highly recommend either or both. Very good movies.
Sounds good. Trey, you got any more?
Not off the top of my head. Like, I could
Well,
if you forced me to, but.
I've got two more that I'd like to say are, up there in my favorites. I do have to give a huge shout out to Rocky Horror, both the
Ah!
show and the picture show.
Didn't even think about it.
Course.
Yup.
Of course. Good call.
Good
So a quick
call.
shout out to that. Feel like I don't really need to
Explain that,
elaborate.
yeah.
But I do also want to say that I love Ghost Adventures. It's
The dub, of course.
so terrible. I love it. They're so stupid. It's a ghost hunting show. It's the worst ghost hunting show. It's these dudes who go into a haunted place and yell at ghosts. They're really dumb, and I love it.
I love that show for all the wrong reasons. Because these guys, like, they just find these buildings. They're like, "Hey, ghost, effing fight me." And, like, that's every episode.
Pretty much. Slam my head in the door. Do it.
Jeez.
Okay. we're gonna make sure that everyone's safe, right? And then they constantly take, there's like three main dudes. One of them constantly gets like locked in the lowest, deepest, darkest part of whatever like haunted place they're in and left there by himself. Like they constantly like just lock him in a place by himself and just like, okay, have fun. We're going to go do other stuff in the other part of the building. It's just like,
we'll leave these night vision cameras on you. Hang out down here with the lights off. Okay, bye.
Exactly. It's just ridiculous.
It's a fantastic show.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to admit for a minute, I got that confused with Ghost Stories.
No.
The anime series.
Ghost Stories is such a delightful mess.
With its dub, which was largely done the way that my friends did fan dubs in college.
Well, and that's an interesting one, because a lot of people know about Ghost Stories, but like you get some kind of mixed explanations as to why it turned out the way it did. Like, from what I understand, in the anime industry, it is not uncommon that studios will, when working with companies, they will make them contracts, and sometimes the contract will be like, okay, you can get this popular show, but you also have to pay to license this less popular show.
Yeah.
And from the sounds of it, that's what happened with Ghost Stories, which was a financial failure in Japan, to the point that the studio told them that they didn't particularly care what they did with the dub. So,
Yeah.
Pretty amazing results. Great performances by Hillary Haig, Chris Patton, Greg Ayers, and Monica Rial as the four main characters. It's very funny.
Yeah. I've only seen parts of it, but it's hilarious. It's just, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And so I wanted
to... a professionally produced abridged series.
Yeah, it... Well, it's so there's this thing called the Maze Dub, which gets passed around No Brand Con circles and things like that, where former No Brand Con directors Vink, Neil, and Peso dubbed an episode of the anime series Maze, having never watched it with the sound on.
Oh dear.
Or the subtitles. They wrote a script and dubbed it, having no idea what the show was about, having no idea what anything was about, and voiced all the characters, and just like, so no one's got like a consistent name. Well, I mean, like, they have consistent, but like their names are just made up, like, because again, they didn't know the names of any of the characters. It is quoted to this day amongst, like, former No Brand Con staffers with such quotes as, I did not eat that delicious man. Do not look at me with those eyes. And, Pumpkin Man is a repeated character because there's a character who wears a helmet with, like, the big teeth. And so when Vink did all the guy's lines, he called the guy Pumpkin Man and spoke in the third person. And would drop his lip under his jaw to, like, could God make a rock so big that even Pumpkin Man could not lift it? is another quote from it. There is a point in the episode where they were dubbing it as they went. And so there's a moment where one of them gets grossed out by the scene that's happening. Like, it just starts talking over it. It is on my website, I think. I think I have it up on thonline.com somewhere. I may have the Maze dub up. I have to check this. Let's see here. I'm using Google to search my own site. There we go. I found it. So if you search Maze Dub TRH Online, it does require the Flash plugin to play the video because it's just hosted off of my own server because it's a massive copyright violation. And so it got pulled off YouTube, obviously. Because it's visually an entire episode of the show.
Right.
It's so you can't watch it on mobile. You do have to watch it on a computer that has some browser with a Flash plugin because it's still using an old Flash video player. But you can watch the Maze Dub right now on the internet if you go watch. Look, and you should. Yeah. They called themselves the Dumbers Club.
This sounds good.
Yeah, it's worth a half hour of your life. Pumpkin Man.
I think that wraps me up. How about you guys?
Yeah, I'm pretty good for right now.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good selection.
So there's some not-so-scary Halloween stuff for all of you, and get excited because we're going to be talking about some scary stuff soon.
Yeah, we're going to get scary. We got spoopy next time we get spooky. And that probably leads us on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, doesn't it?
But yeah, it does. It does.
Yeah, I know, but I don't have it open, which means I got to open it, and I've been trying to Photoshop poorly Jackie Chan onto the Moonchild poster. That's going to be the title card. I've taken the bad Photoshop thing from the Vampire Effect poster and I'm putting it on the Moonchild poster. Because I can't think of a better thing to put on the cover of this episode. Do you? Can you?
Yeah, that sounds really good.
All right, so the Vomit Head Steve Challenge. That thing, instead of doing the thing I'm supposed to do after the show, I'm going to do the thing that I'm supposed to do during the show. The Vomit Head Steve Challenge is the part of the show where I read to you a part of a book. It's very exciting. Obviously, we're going straight to this because we didn't get any mailbag this episode. If you guys are sending stuff still and we're not getting it, tell us, because it's been suspiciously quiet. Besides the one person trying to convince me that they came from the future and that I should buy their cryptocurrency. I'm not kidding. I keep getting messages in the Nerd and Tech contact, which are like, I'm from the future. You should buy this. I'm you from the future. They keep trying to convince me that they're me from the future. Like, it's a very creative spam.
I'll say you can't say. Yeah, I was gonna ask if it was John Teeter, but okay.
I know.
Sure.
I don't know. It's telling me that besides Bitcoin, I should be investing in this other cryptocurrency. But that I'm sure that the person sending it has absolutely no financial connection to.
Absolutely none. Why would you even suggest that?
Oof. So, to jump back into the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is a challenge where I read part of a book every episode, and the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book I am reading from. If you can guess correctly, you will get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, we list your name on the website. 2, we say your name aloud every episode. And 3, nothing else, this is a joke. Anyways, so the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkham Zero, Rin and Sente, Cheesy McDammy, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Source, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shizuo, and Sakura Sunset. Now, I've been reading from the same book for a while, so I will pull that open and find a random line for y'all. Let's see here. Thy plan, it shall not work. And wherefore hast thou not said this ere now? Aye, but I have. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, and tell us. Or if you want to tell us anything else and would like us to read your letters here, do that too. Go to nerdandtie.com/contact, fill out the form, fill out the wordy words, or you can call us at area code 414-375-0480. And we would be happy to actually play your voice on the air alongside ours. And we'd pretend you were here and just, like, talk to you. And I'll edit together responses from your call so it sounds like you're interacting. It'll be great. You could be the fourth nerd and tie. Or not. I don't know. It's keep going with my funky fresh flow.
Sure, why not?
I don't know.
Well, I'm just looking forward to watching some more weird, vaguely comedic Asian rock star movies, so. With that, I think we should sign off.
I'm Gen Proc.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I am Nick Izumi.
And this has been Nerd and Tie. And we're wearing pants, man. And I put on the wrong song. Now there's the right song. Look, we got opening credits, man. We got end credits. And the end credits won't jump to where they're supposed to. There we go. Anyways, remember, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, on Stitcher. We are now on Spotify. That's new this episode. You can listen to the show on Spotify, on Podbean, on any other place that podcasts are served with an RSS feed. You should rate and review us on Stitcher and iTunes. And I don't know if you can rate and review things on Spotify. I haven't looked at the interface enough. They just let me add it to it 2 days ago. And remember, you can follow us on social media at Nerd and Tie, at Twitter, nerdandtie.tumblr.com, facebook.com/nerdandtie. Remember, you can support the show financially either by sponsoring it at nerdandtie.com and clicking on the sponsor information, or you can sponsor us individually by Nick's got a Patreon at patreon.com/nickizumi. I've got a Patreon at patreon.com/TREGORN. Gen has Ocelot Dude Designs on Etsy. You can buy cool stuff she makes, or you can support her by going to a coffee link at coffee/Genjamin. And yeah, you should do that. Or remember, we have a legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie. I got it all right.
Yep.
Can't think of anything else.
Woo!
Keep on Spocking in the free world.
Maybe we should put a Hard Rock Zombie in the background on this image.
Do it.
Okay, I gotta find a picture of a Hard Rock Zombie. Googling Hard Rock Zombies. I'm going to have the most interesting search history by the end of the night.
It's got to be better than a Party Rock Zombie.
But what if those rock zombies are here to party hard?